From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Dr. Christine Blasey Ford has reached a deal with the Senate Judiciary Committee to testify this Thursday. Blasey Ford has accused Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of attempting to rape her when they were both in high school. Her lawyers released a statement on Sunday saying, despite actual threats to her safety and her life, Dr. Ford believes it is important for senators to hear directly from her about the sexual assault committed against her. Meanwhile, two new allegations have come up implicating Kavanaugh. On Sunday, The New Yorker published a report of a woman named Deborah Ramirez, who says she was the target of sexual assault by Kavanaugh at a party in the early 1980s when the judge was a freshman at Yale University. And attorney Michael Avenatti says he has, quote, significant evidence of multiple house parties in the Washington, D.C. area during the early 1990s, during which Brett Kavanaugh, Mark Judge, and others would participate in the targeting of women with alcohol slash drugs in order to allow a, quote, train of men to subsequently gang rape them. Democrats have asked for Kavanaugh's nomination to be postponed. It remains to be seen what Republicans will do. My guest is Jessica Mason Piclo, Vice President of Law and the Courts at Rewire.news. She's a writer and an adjunct law professor at Boulder, Colorado, and is the former Assistant Director of the Health Law Clinic at Hamline Law School in St. Paul, Minnesota, and a former litigator. Welcome back to the program, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always so great to be here.
So every time we have you back on, I feel like, okay, this might be the last chapter in the Kavanaugh confirmation, either, you know, that he would be confirmed or wouldn't. And of course, now we have this incredible turn of events that it's sort of hard to wrap one's head around. We have been talking in the last few weeks about the fact that Kavanaugh might have perjured himself. People have called for his impeachment from the courts that he now serves on. And then, of course, we had what Christine Blasey Ford has said. It seems as though Republicans are just going to, in Mitch McConnell's words, plow through this. As far as you can tell, is that their plan?
So far, all signs point to that being exactly their plan. And we have even some more evidence of that. So on Monday, there was news that in Maryland, there might be a potential fourth accuser against Brett Kavanaugh. And then in response, Kavanaugh sent a letter to the Senate Judiciary Committee where he again denied flatly all of the allegations that have surfaced against him and is insisting that he will not withdraw from the process. And President Trump himself has on Monday also said that the allegations are simply political smears and tactics designed to undermine the nomination. So all signs point to Republicans really standing by their man here.
It was interesting that when you had Republicans, including Republican women, react first to Dr. Ford's allegation, their comeback was, this is just one incident, one woman, and it happened 36 years ago. If he was indeed a sexual predator, we would see many women start speaking up. And lo and behold, women have started speaking up.
Yes, it's a really good point. I mean, the Republican women who had initially been waffling and on the fence about these allegations really painted themselves in a corner by taking this approach of, well, this is an isolated incident, or this happened when he was just a kid, so he can't be held responsible to it, of all sorts of variations of those arguments that we've seen. But instead, what's emerged is quite clearly a pattern of at least very much disrespecting women and then not being forthcoming about it. It's not, you know, one of the things that's frustrating about this process is the Senate Judiciary Committee, these hearings are not designed to be a criminal trial as to the, you know, truth or falsity of the allegations against Brett Kavanaugh beyond a reasonable doubt. This is about his judicial temperament and about, you know, effectively a job interview, because that's what these proceedings are. And so, you know, would you continue to interview a candidate if during the process people were coming out of the woodworks to talk about what a, you know, how horrible their experience with this person is? I mean, if we just bring it down to really basic levels and get it away from the hype around, you know, sexual assault that Republicans are really sort of playing in bad faith with here, it's even the allegations are so terrible, but even if they weren't terrible, if it was, you know, something simply like he was just really rude to people, it still shows that during his confirmation process, he was not forthcoming about it, that they absolutely, the Senate Republicans, put a parade around him because they knew that there would be these character allegations. And the character allegations for his temperament are really very serious.
So we were seeing this image being painted of him as a family man, a pious Catholic man. And of course, if you're going to bring up Yishuv Catholic these days, doesn't have a very good reputation given the church pedophilia scandal. He was also asked point blank during the first set of confirmation hearings by Senator Mazie Hirono if he had ever engaged in any kind of sexual assault or harassment. And she cited that we're in the new era now with the hashtag MeToo issue. And, you know, of course, we wouldn't expect him to say otherwise. We wouldn't expect him to suddenly under oath admit that he had been engaging in anything in his previous years. But she asked him and he denied under oath that he had ever been engaged in anything, any sort of sexual assault. So now we have two, possibly three, possibly four accusers. As far as you know, sticking to Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, because she's the one who sort of, you know, did the most difficult thing by being the first person to stand up. What is the deal that her lawyers have reached as of now with the Senate Judiciary Committee to testify Thursday? So far, not that many details forthcoming, right?
No, I was going to say the details of any potential testimony that would happen on Thursday are still very much up in the air. What we do know is that Dr. Ford's attorney has agreed to make her available for the senators on Thursday. It is unclear to the extent of a public hearing, so how public a hearing this will be. And in terms of who questions Dr. Ford and how, even those details are being worked out. Her lawyer has said that it is absolutely not appropriate to hire outside counsel, for example, to come in and question her, which Senate Republicans had considered, because at the very least, they have really bad optics going on here. I mean, it's not just enough that the ranking members of the Senate Judiciary Committee all happen to be the Republicans who voted against renewing the Violence Against Women Act a while ago. You know, here we have all of the same men who were so terrible to Professor Anita Hill when she came forward with her allegations of sexual harassment against now Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. And so there is an element of history repeating itself here that Senate Republicans are very aware of, and which is why you've seen reports that they were, for example, looking to have female staffers be the people who questioned Ford, because they didn't want the appearance of all these old white men attacking these allegations of sexual assault and calling them political smears. At the very least, that doesn't look good. So we don't know much about how Thursday will happen. And with all of these new allegations, frankly, we don't know if Thursday will happen at this point.
Wow. It's so interesting because all of this is happening at the same time that Bill Cosby is being sentenced on Monday for sexual assault crimes, rape, the raping and drugging of women. Many of these instances took place over many years and many years ago, and you don't see anybody coming to Cosby's defense anymore, at least. And of course, Harvey Weinstein is also going through, the filmmaker. The incident around him that came to light sparked this latest wave of the hashtag MeToo movement. So if we're going to hold men accountable, we have to hold all men accountable, no matter what's at stake politically. And the Republicans are quite happy when there are allegations against, say, Al Franken, but not against one of their own. And even here on the left, we have to, of course, remind ourselves to apply the same standards and ask ourselves, right, Jessica, had Kavanaugh been Obama's nominee, would we have applied that same standard in demanding that his accusers be heard?
I absolutely hope so. I mean, I think that, Senator Gillibrand really got a lot of heat for the manner in which she spearheaded the response to former Senator Al Franken's the sexual harassment allegations against him, and that ultimately resulted in him resigning from his seat. But it gave Democrats the opportunity here to say, look, we really have a model for handling this, and we have. And we had a model, frankly, before Senator Franken, too. You know, people sometimes forget, but there were allegations against Senator Cory Booker that in high school he was at a party and he groped someone. And he came forward and said, I probably behaved inappropriately. That was a long time ago. And what we need to do is have a culture of respect around sex and sexuality. And that was a radical thing for an elected official to do, was to admit a mistake and then say, you know, here's a path forward for that. But Democrats have a model here. They should use it. And had this been an Obama appointee, or had it been a President Clinton appointee, then absolutely we should be demanding, a full airing of these allegations. And, you know, frankly, I would hope that the Democrats wouldn't have handled this process in any fashion the way that Republicans have, because refusing to have a hearing and air these allegations is just the latest in a long line of obstruction and anti-transparency efforts that the Senate Republicans have had around the Kavanaugh nomination.
So there seem to be multiple reasons, some of which are mutually exclusive, as to why Kavanaugh shouldn't be the next Supreme Court justice. I mentioned the potential perjury issues that some Democrats have called for him to be investigated over. And then, of course, we have the sexual assault allegations now, not to mention, of course, the manner in which the Republican Party, separate from Kavanaugh's, from Kavanaugh personally, the manner in which the Republican Party are rushing through a nomination process just because they're worried about losing control of the of Congress. So when we see what's happening at this moment, this week, with this news-filled week, do you feel that it's any accident that the Thursday confirmation hearing is happening on the same day as Donald Trump has now decided he wants to speak with Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who is the overseer of the Russia investigation, with Trump, who's all about optics and knows how to manipulate media? It seems too much of a coincidence that he's picked the same day as the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing.
It's hard not to feel conspiratorial in the Trump administration these days. I mean, everything, you're right. This is the reality TV president. And so we should be looking to optics first. And the Kavanaugh nomination has not turned out well for Republicans. In so many ways, this is an unforced political error by the Trump administration. There are plenty of qualified candidates who would vote exactly the same way Brett Kavanaugh would on these issues. But I think, hopefully, without the deep paper trail and these horrific allegations that continue to surface about sexual misconduct. And so, you know, the idea that President Trump would schedule another big news meeting the same day as the Kavanaugh hearings is, you know, I think it's fair to question the timing of that and what it means for the press in terms of how we cover these stories and where our attentions can go and how much attention can get paid to each one.
So here we have a situation where a woman has accused Kavanaugh of essentially attempting to rape her in high school. Then another woman has said that she was sexually assaulted, forced to, well, the people can read the details in the New Yorker article, but it's horrible. Kavanaugh exposing himself to her. This happened in college. So we have a high school situation, we have a college situation. There's the friend, Mark Judge, that we know was friends with Kavanaugh. He's pictured with him in high school. And Christine Blasey Ford says he was in the room when Kavanaugh attempted to rape her. And this is a man who's written books about debauchery and drunkenness in high school and has now attempted to whitewash that backdrop. I don't know if he's sort of going to own up, if he's then saying that he was lying in those books. But his ex-girlfriend spoke with the New Yorkers, Ronan Farrow and Jane Mayer, describing this absolutely horrific sounding allegation, which sounds like Michael Avenatti, the lawyer's also echoing and might be representing a client who witnessed the fact that Judge and Kavanaugh were involved in some sort of mass drugging and raping of women in school. This is like, you can't make this stuff up.
You really can't. I mean, the fraternity that Kavanaugh and Judge were members of was eventually kicked off of the Yale campus because of its violations around sexual misconduct, you know, sort of in the initial rise of Title IX and our understanding of how that access impacts educational opportunities for women and victims. So in some ways you can't make it up. And in some ways, given the culture that we're learning about in which these folks were raised and existed in and likely continue to exist in, this also is starting to sound kind of par for the course, which I think should give us all pause too, because, you know, your audience members will likely recall that when Dr. Ford's allegations first surfaced, there was this almost instantaneous letter produced by Senate Republicans of 65 colleagues of Brett Kavanaugh's that said there's just simply no way that he would do this. This is not the Brett Kavanaugh that we know. And as the press started to look into those supporters, that it was pretty clear that was folks were signing on to a letter, not really knowing what they were signing on to, just sort of a general affirmation of his character as opposed to a rebuttal of a credible claim of sexual assault. And so that gives us an insight into this idea that power protects power and access to power protects itself very much. And so I think we're starting to see that. But your original point in terms of just the debauchery and the disrespect and just the seediness of this culture is really disturbing, especially in light of the fact that we're having this conversation in the context of appointing Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. He's already got a lifetime appointment on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, should he still hold on to that position. So, you know, we're considering him for a promotion at this point. And these are the conversations we're having.
So this, we have this really bizarre situation now that a person's Supreme Court nomination might be stymied by something he did in high school, which we, those of us who support women's rights and women's, safety and right to be free from sexual assault, it would be a nice thing to know that we're living in a new era where a man will be hurt by an assault that he committed in high school. He will not have a perfect career because of the way in which he behaved in high school or college, and that this whole boys will be boys mentality is thrown out. And it should send a message to today's boys that if you try this sort of stuff, no matter how old you are, we now live in an era where that will come to bite you in the future. And that's
absolutely
a good thing.
I think so too. I mean, you know, there are definitely some areas of nuance in this conversation too. I mean, you know, so for example, this boys will be boys tag that we hear, this Kavanaugh was, you know, young and he shouldn't be held accountable for something he did over 30 years ago. You know, that's very racially coded. Only some boys get to be boys in these contexts, right? And it's usually wealthy white ones. We don't see that sort of same feeling for young men of color, for example.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
The other thing that's important to remember is, you know, in these allegations, Dr. Ford was a kid herself. So, you know, boys will be boys, saying Brett Kavanaugh is just a child when this happened. Dr. Ford was also just a child when this happened. And so I think the point of recentering the narrative around the impacted people, in this case, Dr. Ford as the survivor here, is really critically important. And I also think it's important because this is a lawyerly detail, but, you know, generally speaking, I'm not a big fan of extended criminal liability for juveniles, for example, right? This is a very problematic area. And so when we talk about the Kavanaugh allegations, yes, he's being held accountable for actions that he took as a teenager and young adult, given the age span for the allegations against him while he was in college. But importantly, he is being held accountable for the way, as an adult, he managed those and responded to them. He has had opportunities to find places of entry into this conversation, to have an informed and good faith conversation about what happened. And that has not yet happened. The only thing we have seen Brett Kavanaugh and Senate Republicans really do is double and triple and quadruple down on these denials. He has given himself absolutely no wiggle room here. This is quite clearly, it didn't happen, and these women are liars.
Finally, Do you have any sense that given the weight of the multiple allegations that Kavanaugh could possibly withdraw his nomination between now and Thursday?
I would certainly think so. As I mentioned earlier, today he sent a letter to the Senate Judiciary Committee that, you know, called these allegations smears, said he will not be intimidated into resigning or removing his name from the process. He pointed to his record of hiring women to suggest that he is a strong ally. And so there's no indication from Kavanaugh's point right now that he intends to do anything but maintain that these women are lying, that he is not an abuser, and to force his way onto the Supreme Court. And Republicans seem willing to make that happen. So, but the other thing with the story, as you well know, is that it changes fast. You know, in the time from Dr. Ford's allegations just through the weekend, we ended up with a list of new accusations. And so there is a lot of time between Monday and Thursday to see, you know, and then following Thursday, I mean, should the hearings happen on Thursday, you know, who knows what goes on in there. Unlike the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas hearings, the Senate Judiciary Committee now has women members and women prosecutors. So we have Senator Kamala Harris and Senator Amy Klobuchar, both of whom have extensive experience as prosecutors prosecuting sexual assault cases. And so it will be very interesting to see, you know, what their presence in this situation brings, let alone the other ranking members of the committee, like Senator Dianne Feinstein and Mazie Hirono.
Jessica, I want to thank you so much, as always, for joining us today. We'll see what the next few days hold.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always such a pleasure.
Jessica Mason-Piclo is the Vice President of Law and the Courts at Rewire.news. She's a writer and adjunct law professor in Boulder, Colorado, former Assistant Director of the Health Law Clinic at Hamlin Law School in St. Paul, Minnesota. We've been discussing the latest in the Kavanaugh confirmation story. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.